Do you suppose we'll meet any wild animals?
We might. Animals that eat straw? Some, but mostly lions and tigers and bears.
Lions?
And tigers?
And bears.
Lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
Lions and tigers and bears.
Oh, my.
Lions and tigers and bears.
Oh, my.
Lions and tigers and bears.
Oh, my.
Lions and tigers and bears.
Oh, my.
That's for everyone who didn't get to finish it when you were a kid. You still don't get to finish it. This world can be a scary place sometimes. And the road we're traveling leads us through difficult, dangerous, dark territory. And every week we gather in this place, or we watch online to see what happens when we gather in this place. As fellow travelers, pilgrims on the same road, we're all longing for the same thing. We long for hope. We long for encouragement. We need for our strength and our faith to be restored and renewed so we can keep moving forward. We need wisdom. We need inspiration. We also need the peace of mind that comes from knowing that no matter how difficult it gets, we are not walking this path alone, and that we will reach our destination safely someday. What we need is the same message Jesus spoke to his disciples in John chapter 14 through 16. This is also known as his farewell discourse, and we skipped it back in March because we were in a hurry to get to Easter. But now we're backtracking, and we'll spend several weeks in this important section of John's gospel because this is Jesus's final speech to his disciples before he's crucified, in which he prepares them for his imminent departure, not just his death when they'll lose him for a couple of days and then get him back, but for his ascension after his resurrection when he goes back to his Father in heaven after successfully completing his mission on earth. And after telling them that he's leaving at the end of chapter 13, he says in chapter 14, beginning in verse 1, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am." So this establishes the framework for what Jesus is going to say in this final speech. He says, "I'm going away to prepare a place for you in my Father's house. Don't worry, there's plenty of room for everybody. No shortage of space. Now get your spot ready, and then I will come back and take you to be with me where I am." And this is better imagined as life in the new creation with God. The new heavens and the new earth, not some mansion up in the sky in the clouds somewhere. This is Jesus preparing a whole new creation for his disciples to live in. But that's another topic for another time. And while the announcement of Jesus' departure brings about some sadness, it's also intended to bring about some gladness. At least Jesus wants his disciples to be glad. He's accomplishing his goal. He's finishing his mission. He's achieving his purpose as the Son of God on earth. He's doing what he was supposed to do. And the Father is pleased with him for doing it. And his glory will be seen because he's doing it. He wants them to be able to celebrate that he is going away to prepare a place. And he is coming back to take them to be with him. But that tension between the sadness and the gladness captures the challenge for Jesus' disciples then and now of living in between the pivotal events of Jesus' life, his death, his resurrection, his ascension. what we read about in the Gospel of John when Jesus is glorified, living in between those events and his final return. This is sometimes called living in between the times, or living in between the already and the not yet. And this is a space in between of great tension and discomfort. John 16:33, at the very end of his farewell address, Jesus says, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world." He doesn't say, "I'm going to overcome the world someday." He says, "I've already overcome the world." It's already happened in his life, death, resurrection, and ascension. All of this is the already. He achieves a victory over sin and death and the forces of evil. It's achieved, but it has not yet been fully implemented and won't be until he fully returns to restore creation. And it's important we keep this framework in mind, not just when reading the farewell discourse, but when reading anything in the New Testament, because everything in the New Testament is written to Christians who, just like us, are living in between that already and the not yet, who are walking the path in between the already and the not yet. And Jesus does not minimize the difficulty of this road we're walking on. He says, "In this world, you will have trouble. You will face adversity. You will encounter opposition and resistance. It will not be easy. So don't expect it to be, and don't act surprised when it's not. It will at times be scary. There will be lions and tigers and bears and maybe a few flying monkeys as well." Jesus is preparing his disciples for the coming difficulty and darkness they'll face. He's also preparing and addressing them for and addressing the separation anxiety they will experience after he departs. Separation anxiety is what psychologists call that sense of panic that children get when they are suddenly separated from their parents, especially during times of stress. I've told you before about the time when I was a little boy and I was in a store with my mom. We somehow got separated from one another, and when I looked up and realized that I couldn't find my mommy, which, by the way, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, especially my mom watching right now. Hi, Mom. Always wanted to do that. When I looked up and realized that I couldn't find my mommy, I found a store clerk and asked for help. And she said, "Well, what is your name?" And I told her, "Well, I'm Shazam." Because I was Shazam at the time. I had the t-shirt with a lightning bolt on it. She said, "Tell me your name again." I said, "I'm Shazam." She gets on the PA system and announces, "Attention Kmart shoppers. We have a little boy at the front of the store looking for his mother. Says his name is Sam." And my mom is standing back watching this whole thing. She never lost sight of me. She just wanted to see how I would respond to adversity. Thanks, Mom. She steps forward to claim me and says, "Why did you call him Sam?" And the clerk says, "Well, I kept asking him his name, and he kept saying, 'I'm just Sam.'" Just because I thought I was alone, because I felt I was alone, doesn't mean my mother wasn't still with me. Just because I couldn't see my mom doesn't mean she couldn't still see me. And one of the big ideas of the farewell discourse is that while Jesus is physically absent from his disciples, he's no longer with them in the flesh. He is not leaving them. He is not leaving us as orphans to walk the road in between the already and not yet all by ourselves. He's still with us, he says, just not in the same way he was before. It says in chapter 14, verse 15 and following, if you love me, keep my commands. We'll talk more about that in a week or two. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to help you and be with you forever, the Spirit of Truth. The world cannot accept him because it neither sees him nor knows him, but you know him, for he lives with you and will be in you. I will not leave you as orphans. There's no reason to have separation anxiety. I will come to you. Here Jesus describes the Holy Spirit, the coming of the Holy Spirit, the sending of the Holy Spirit, whom he calls the Spirit of Truth. He also uses a word that is unique in the Gospel of John. In the original language, it's paraclete. And paraclete can be translated as an advocate, as in someone who's on your side, or as a counselor, as in someone who gives you wise advice, or as a comforter, as someone who helps assuage your sorrow and your grief. Jesus says, the Father will, at my request, send a paraclete, which literally means someone who comes or walks alongside you. The Father will send the one that walks alongside. And did you notice Jesus said the Father will send another paraclete? And if the Holy Spirit is the second paraclete, then who was the first? Well, it's Jesus. He's the first paraclete. And I love that imagery of Jesus walking with his disciples for 3 years. And then when Jesus leaves, the Holy Spirit takes its place and walks with his disciples. And the Spirit of Truth has been walking with his disciples, walking with his church, walking with us ever since. And then Jesus goes on later on in chapter 14 to describe one of the primary ways that the Holy Spirit, the Paraclete, helps us remain faithful to Jesus when life in between the already and the not yet gets really hard. Says in verse 25, all of this I've spoken while still with you, but the advocate, the paraclete, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world does. Do not let your hearts be troubled. And don't be afraid. The functional creed for many Christians is we believe in God the Father and in his Son, Jesus Christ, but we're not sure about the Holy Spirit. Like many of you, I was raised to not be sure about or even suspicious of the Holy Spirit. And it's true, there are places in the New Testament where the work of the Holy Spirit is described in, like 1 Corinthians, for example, is described in ways that leave us puzzled or discomforted. And so all very mysterious. But in the farewell address, Jesus describes the work of the Holy Spirit as the exact opposite. He sends the Holy Spirit not to confuse us, but to clarify things for us. Not to conceal a mystery, but to reveal the truth to us. Not to upset us, but to give us peace when we're walking through a dark, haunted forest. Now, it's true that the Holy Spirit also pokes and prods and pushes and pulls us out of our comfort zones into bigger and deeper truths that can at times leave us discombobulated. Go read the book of Acts to see what that looks like. Sometimes the Holy Spirit has to make us uncomfortable for the sake of the gospel. But here Jesus is emphasizing a different role. It's the Holy Spirit who comes and walks alongside us to comfort and encourage and inspire us, to give us wise counsel when the darkness, the opposition, the adversity makes us want to give in to the fear and give up on following Jesus. Elsewhere in the address, he says, I'm telling you these things so that you won't quit, so that you'll keep going. so that you won't give up. And to that end, Jesus says the Holy Spirit both teaches and reminds. And sometimes the Holy Spirit teaches by reminding. We've noticed throughout the Gospel of John that Jesus' disciples almost never understand what he's saying and doing, and they don't until after the fact, after his resurrection and ascension, when by the power and with the help of the Holy Spirit, they begin to get it in hindsight. They understand by remembering. How many times have you gained insight to something that happened to you, something God was doing in your life? You didn't realize it at the moment. You certainly couldn't see it at the moment, but the Holy Spirit helped you understand it by remembering it. In fact, the Gospel of John is the result or product of the Holy Spirit's teaching and reminding ministry. The beloved disciple writes the Gospel of John decades after the events depicted took place, long after Jesus' disciples had begun to make sense of their experiences with Jesus when he walked with them in the flesh. He remembered, and they understood. Every time we read the Gospel of John, the Holy Spirit is teaching and reminding us. The Gospel of John, remember, was written to encourage beleaguered Christians to keep on believing, keep on walking, keep on trusting. Remember and understand. Remember and understand. This isn't to say that the work of the Holy Spirit is confined to the written word, not at all, but the Holy Spirit does work in concert with the written word. How can we be reminded of what Jesus said and did if what Jesus said and did was never at first in our minds? When we read and study and discuss and pray over and memorize the scriptures, we're giving the Holy Spirit something to work with. You can't remember something you never knew in the first place. The Holy Spirit takes what we know about Jesus and uses it to comfort and encourage and inspire us at just the right time when we need it the most. When facing rejection, the Holy Spirit alongside of us whispers, "Remember Jesus? He too was rejected. But his Father in heaven lifted him up from his low place, and your Father in heaven will lift you up from your low place." And when we're betrayed and abandoned by our friends, those who pledge their loyalty to us, the Spirit alongside us whispers, "Remember Jesus? He too was abandoned, betrayed by his friends, but he was never alone, ever alone. His Father in heaven was with him, and your Father in heaven and your big brother Jesus, they're with you too." And when grief overwhelms our heart, the Spirit alongside us whispers, "Remember Jesus? You remember? He too stood outside of a friend's tomb weeping. But death and his friends did not have the final word over Jesus and his friends." Or when the forces of darkness attack us and we feel the darkness pressing in upon us, and everything within and around us seems to be falling apart, the Spirit alongside us says, "Hey, remember Jesus? He has already overcome the world. He has already defeated sin and death and darkness and evil. Be strong and courageous and don't lose hope. Keep going." And when we're tempted to veer off the path of self-giving love onto a path of selfish indulgence, putting our needs and interests and rights and freedoms and preferences above the needs and interests and rights and freedoms of others. The Holy Spirit whispers, hey, you, remember Jesus. He emptied himself. He poured himself out. He gave up his rights and privileges and freedoms and preferences for the sake of the world. Remember him and follow his example and discover the joy found in emptying yourself for the sake of others. Or when we're so discouraged because we can't get it right, we can't move beyond our own moral weakness, and so that we're tempted to give up on pursuing Christ-likeness. We're just not worthy. The Spirit alongside us whispers, remember Jesus. He did not give up on his disciples when they couldn't get it right. And he's not giving up on you. You don't give up on him. None of these insights or teachings are new, are they? I haven't said anything new. These are truths about Jesus we have known and we know. And yet these are also truths that are so easy to forget when our lives are swirling in chaos or mired in grief or upended by a crisis. And it's in those moments when the whole world is coming apart, when it looks and feels like the darkness is winning, it's in those moments when the Spirit does the Spirit's best work and says, remember Jesus. Remember and understand that you are not alone. He's still with you. His faith and his strength and his power is still flowing and at work inside of you. So may the Spirit that is within us, but also alongside us, may the Spirit keep reminding us of exactly what we need to remember about Jesus so that we can all keep moving forward in faith.